Welcome back to New Opportunities for Growth. We are almost done here. This is the penultimate podcast before the end of the semester, and we are continuing our discussion about capital investments. So very excited about this, because this is really the big idea of the course: is how do we make our smart manufacturing technology work for us from a financial perspective? So with that being said, Kathy, I want to start off by asking you a question that I think is very relevant and important to kind of start out with. And that is, you know, when you think about replacing old technology, we know that every tool eventually is going to have to get replaced. You know, our smartwatches, our smartphones, they all get outdated. And, you know, we just naturally know we have to replace them with newer models, right? But when it comes to machinery, when does it make sense to say, okay, you know, we got this old machinery, we got to replace it. Yeah, we could buy, you know, the same type of machinery, but what would affect our decision in terms of saying, nope, now's the time, we're going to invest in new machinery, but more specifically, smart manufacturing machinery or technology?
Well, that's a great question. And this is a good time to be asking it for lots of reasons. The technology's there, the prices have dropped. Yeah, I know we've got this little supply chain thing going on, and it could be around for another year or two, but I really think that that's going to work itself out, particularly with these technologies. The demand is just out the roof. Don't forget, too, that I think through 2023, we've got some pretty nice investments incentives based on some of the tax laws, and I'm hopeful those will be continued after that. I mean, it's kind of the best way for the government to continue to incentivize companies to invest in new capital equipment, and maybe even more importantly, new smart technologies. We are in a race with the globe to get better at this and to prepare ourselves as a nation for, you know, continuing leadership in these areas. Now, when? Well, to some degree, this is just like you've always done. You have equipment. At times, you replace that with old equipment. Sometimes it's when there's a newer, cooler version out and, you know, you've pretty much depreciated it, or at least you've gotten to a point where you've depreciated that and you think, you know, we're going to see some incremental benefit from going out and spending a little bit more money. It's all about the tax shields, right? You've read the book. You've run some equations, hopefully, on that, and you see that, yeah, we are actually shielding ourselves from paying taxes by investing in these new technologies. Yeah, we expense depreciation. We don't have to pay taxes on all of that. And so that's a really, really nice way to think about this. So is it just about, though, replacing old equipment? With smart technologies, it might not be. I mean, as you guys by now know, to some degree, you may have a production line that you can implement certain smart technologies within existing big line. You can add sensors, you can add buffers, you can add counters, you can add all kinds of technologies that might make those things run more efficiently, smarter, communicating directly with the whole production line that makes it run seamlessly, so that you're not doing lots of manual, you know, operations in there. Look, those things can be added. But to really answer your question, Adam, it's when there's a good net present value, when we can make money doing it, right? Somewhere in this, I'll mention other options, because if our company can't afford to do that, we may have to either wait or find other options to help us get some of these new technologies, or maybe the production output that we actually need from somewhere else. You never know what's going to happen when you're looking at these decisions until you crunch the numbers, which is why we place a high priority on this class. Until you start really looking at not just what it's going to do for you as a company, but what it's going to cost you, what's the incremental cost savings, incremental cash flows, incremental tax burdens or gains. I mean, we're going to sell the stuff, but there's opportunities.
Well, it's interesting you say that because you're helping me understand. It's not just like, oh, the iPhone 12 is out. I'm going to go buy that. Or by the time your students hear this, who knows? Maybe it'll be the iPhone 13 or 14. I don't know. But it doesn't matter. The point is it's not that simple, right? It's not like, oh, we'll just replace it and it will be fine. There's a lot more to it. And I think that's a really important distinction that you made. And sometimes it's not just replacing your phone with a new phone. It's adding existing technologies if it makes sense, right? You don't just go out and get the extra accessory because it's an accessory and it looks cool and it's on sale for Black Friday. There's a lot more to it. And I think that's an important distinction to make. And I think that's what makes it so hard is we kind of have to get rid of the financial consumer mindset and look more at the business component of it. And you talk about all these different terminologies. So one of them I wanted to talk to you about are incremental depreciation. That was one of the terms that you just used. What? Tell me more about the effects of incremental depreciation. I feel like I'm on Jeopardy right now, right? Like one day I'm going to need to know what that is. Final Jeopardy.
Incremental depreciation. It sounds like a trick question, my students would say. I think you're pulling my leg here. But the truth is you're going to look at a lot of incremental costs in this replacement decision. You worked a problem like this. But look, I had an old piece of equipment, and I'm probably, possibly, depending on how old that is, still depreciating that. And so whatever depreciation, calendar it's on, so to speak, is it a 7-year, a 9-year? And you notice that those decrease over time, right? You get the biggest pump of that depreciation there in that first really couple of years. You depreciate a lot of a piece of equipment. And so you may have fewer by the time you get to a new replacement of a piece of equipment. Well, you're literally going to compare what you would have paid per year, right, using the old depreciation factors, and you're going to put that brand new piece of equipment up there, and you're going to put the depreciation up against that, and you're going to take the difference between those two and say, how much more depreciation am I going to be able to take, and because you're going to have years 1 and 2 right up there replacing some older, later years, likely anyway, you're going to have increased depreciation effects right off the bat that are going to be a lovely thing for both your tax burden and your cash flows. So that's all we mean. What's the difference between the old depreciation calculations per year and the new depreciation calculations per year? You kind of get in the weeds there. It'll feel that way. But, you would do this if you bought a new piece of equipment. But the difference between the old and the new is really what they're talking about.
Which was as simple as just, okay, so I'm going to sell my iPhone back for a couple $100 so I can get a new iPhone. I wish it was that easy, but I guess just saying it's a little bit more complicated.
Well, and just like the iPhone, it's a lot more complicated, right? And I'm a conservative buyer, and there's not that much difference. I kind of read the reviews, and when am I going to get the bang for my buck? And it's going to be at least 2 versions of those iPhones before I jump in. I'm just that conservative with that. Unless it's a great camera, and I'm a camera nut. I love to take a lot of pictures. And some of you guys out there and gals out there who are looking at smart technologies, some of you are licking your chops, looking at these new technologies, and you want to have it, even though you might not be needing it right now. I know how you are, and we're the same way in our personal lives sometimes as we are with equipment. A lot more at stake in those businesses you've got. And so, you're asking good questions, Adam.
Well, thanks. I have a great teacher. But, joking aside, it's really comical how much we can draw, relationships between, the consumer market and the commercial market. And so it's really fun to kind of think about that. But you made some really great points. I just want to take a moment and talk about that for a minute, because I think that's important. So coming into this class, Kathy, I would have said, we just got to buy smart technology. But you're saying, no, there's a calculation to think about, and it's not just we need to, stay competitive. It has to make sense, both, sense like common sense, but it also has to make money sense as well. And hopefully it makes more than that. So it's not always just a simple decision because, oh, well, we just need sensors because they're cool, or we just need this. Like, it's really got to tick a lot of different boxes. So I think that's really important. And I know we talked a lot about return on investment But is that kind of why you get in the weeds as well? Because when you start, the return on investment is really dependent on all these different things, including, you know, the depreciation value and all that stuff. Is that correct?
Well, it is. And of course, what we're really calculating for a production line is going to be our net present value. When we're looking at that new replacement decision, we're going to look at, you know, internal rate of return or net present value, one of those capital budgeting techniques. But our company overall is kind of what you're alluding to. What is that return on investment that we're doing? How are we using our assets? How often are they turning over? And every time they do turn over, what kind of a return are we going to make? You know, the return on investment is a pretty big calculation, and all of our companies, all the companies do that and want to know, what are we returning on the hopefully efficient use of our and wise use and structure of our assets? And we are literally, by taking on a new piece of equipment or a whole new production line, we are restructuring our assets, right? Likely in a way that puts a bigger chunk of money or investment of our corporation into fixed equipment that is there to bring an output. Now, it's kind of a big deal. Right? Remember when we talked about leverage? We might be increasing our leverage related to debt, right? Because we may be taking on quite a bit of debt there. Again, there's some beauty in debt. You know, there's also, though, because I'm using other people's money, it's not just a return on mine, it's a return on OPM. Interest rates are low right now, but hopefully they will still be by the time we're doing it. I'm not so confident in that, just from my own personal, you know, prognostication thinking. I've lived through, you know, way over 10% interest rates. I'm not going to go any farther than that, or I'll give my age away. But you know how it is. These are important considerations for a company from a structural standpoint. I mentioned the debt leverage. I also should talk about operational leverage, and I'll remind you of those terms we looked at early on in the semester. You'll have more fixed assets that are there, and that capacity has to be used. So Adam, when you say when the timing is right, it's also about the size of that new production line. How much do we need to get out of that for how long? Wow, and what's the capacity? You know, we're really always in these decisions too, and here I'm really putting my kind of marketing hat on, do we make this or do we buy this? You know, we're choosing to make it. We're choosing to structure our organization so we're in manufacturing, smart manufacturing, and to do something big. Better be darn sure that I can live that out for the length of the life of this smart manufacturing piece of equipment, and that it's going to continue to serve us well, that we're going to be able to keep it at whatever, you know, you think 100% capacity, but that's not typically realistic in manufacturing. Hopefully it is. That'd be a beautiful thing. But we want it working. We want it making us money all the time. So there is lots more to think about that. When I said make or buy, if we don't make it, we can go find somebody else to make it for us, maybe in the short term, see how it sells. Maybe we can find somebody else to be there when we do explode and have too much. You know, it takes a village. And if you're in an international supply chain, you'd better have some partners who can be your backup village, so to speak, village players who can also help you supply these things. And many of you that I'm talking to, that's, you know, you're way down that path and you've got that stuff figured out. For you small businesses, there are real considerations about your own capacity and how much of your fixed assets you want to tie up into this. It could be an awful lot of money. It can change the very nature of your business and risk. In general, I would just say, look, if I'm talking a commodity, and we know how to make this, the whole world knows how to make this, I'm looking at PVC pipe, go buy it. Go buy it out. Somebody else who does this, has done it forever, can do it cheaper and more efficiently because that's all they've been doing for years. Most of you aren't in that scenario, but if you are, there's your answer. If it's something there are some real good experts at who are going to be much better at you no matter what, and it's not a secret what you're doing, you might consider it too. Take a look at it. On the other hand, if you've got some really cool technologies, some really cool applications for this, you're doing something new, you want this to be yours, and you want to have high control over the quality, because what you can do in a high quality production line will make a difference to your customers. And it is really about knowing your customers and their use of these product lines, after all. If it's going to make a difference, you need to hold on to it. If it's secret, that's your black box. Don't, you know, that's all part of the decision making about don't buy it out. You get, definitely think about, you know, bigger issues than just, can we put a production line in and make this thing and make a net present value? There are bigger strategic, and I've used that word before, but it's absolutely true. Your CEOs, your boards of directors have to think strategically in making these decisions. But so do you. If you're coming up with these ideas and you're taking it back and you're all excited talking to your CEOs and your boards about this, you'd better have thought about some of those things too. If you don't know anything about strategic planning, go get a Strategic Planning for Dummies book. There's tons of them out there. They're all very similar, but you need to be thinking strategically when you're trying to sell these and make these, sell these big smart manufacturing project. You need to be able to know what it is you're talking about.
So, Kathy, at the minimum level, like the bare decision, what's the minimum level we have to meet in order to say, yes, let's replace this?
Well, if I'm using a net present value, and that's by far the most common used out there, you're going to use that cost of capital. Right. You saw it throughout your text. And that's really, you know, my cost of capital. What and how much do I have to make a return in order for this to make it worth for me to invest my money? Remember, there's an opportunity cost. Anytime I take a chunk of cash of my own and I invest it into something, I'm sort of losing all the opportunities to do something else with that money. Hence, it's an opportunity cost for me to do something different. I'd better make it worth my while, right? I'd better know that there's going to be a good outcome here. You know, you can calculate probabilities. You saw that. You'll see that in this chapter. And while we won't talk a lot about that here, you can literally go in and in chapter 13, actually, where we do a little bit more of that. We talk about what are the probabilities of outcomes of each of these. And we look at whether or not they will give us a good, you know, even if we look at good, bad, or ugly outcomes, you know, can I still make that cost of capital? And by the way, we've got to think about that in terms of returns, you know, and risk. We've got to do a little bit of that thinking up front here. But that cost of capital is really important. And that number might actually be different depending on the risk of the project you're looking at. If it looks a little risky and you're going to require it to have a higher payback, I'd add a tack or two or three onto that cost of capital. That is your sort of normal minimum, and add it up, because you've got to make a good return on it. By the way, lots of companies like operating in that risky airspace and make big profits doing it because they're good at it. A lot more companies are conservative and want to be sure that they can, you know, do what they intend to do and still make a good return, but not those really, you know, ballpark, you know, home run kind of things.
Yeah, so as we're making this decision, once again, and they start to sound similar over time, but could you remind us of the importance of using cash flows rather than accounting flows in this replacement decision?
Accounting flows, it might look like not so much of a net present value, because, you know, accounting flows are profitability. And we've already taken the depreciation as an expense. We really haven't accounted for the fact that I get to add that back in. That cash shouldn't go anywhere. Depreciation is, you know, one of my professors called it kind of like funny money. You know, you spend it, you expense it. That's where your profits come from, but then you get to add it back in because you really haven't spent it. But in another sense, on that general ledger, and maybe on the manufacturing floor, maybe not, if I've used up that piece of equipment over time, it's not worth what it was to begin with. I have to depreciate the value of it to actually match what it's now worth. That's all depreciation does, right? I take out depreciation expenses so that I'm sort of matching what that actual value is. And in fact, I can, you know, when it comes time to maybe replace that equipment, like we were talking about, from an incremental depreciation, we can also look at the incremental lowering value of that piece of equipment. There's a salvage value at some point to every piece of equipment when we go to sell it. What is it? I deduct all of the depreciation if I haven't already depreciated it fully, you know, and at some point it might say zero, I've depreciated it fully, but it's not really, there's a salvage value. But, you know, if I'm doing that midstream in my depreciation, I'm going to have something left over and there's a value on the books and it'll show me that. Now, is that what I'm going to sell it for? Probably not. I'm going to go out and see what I can sell. I'm going to have to figure out how many hours are on that piece of equipment, or at least a general idea about how much I've actually used it. And I'm going to figure out what it's worth, because what it's worth tells me whether I'm going to have to pay taxes on the sale of that. If I sell that for more, a lot more than what's on the books, I'm going to have to pay a capital gains tax on that. All right. Again, incremental values that Adam asked me about, that's another potential incremental, could be a good thing, not so good thing. Now, on the one hand, I could have more cash to pay for the new piece of equipment. Yay, I'd love that. On the other hand, there might be a tax ramification. Balancing those out, crunching the numbers, seeing the different scenarios and what that means might be important to you. Others might be willing to go, hey, let's just go. Let's sell that as quick as we can. We don't care about bringing the highest value on that thing. In fact, a little bit of a loss might be a beautiful thing, because guess what? I deduct losses as well. So, you know, and in general, you do the best you can to maximize all of those options. I want to get the most I can, salvage value, make that new investment on the newer one, and off to the big show we go, making money with our new smart manufacturing, you know, piece of line of equipment.
So it sounds like, really, to kind of summarize what you're saying, there's a hidden cost, but there's also a hidden what do you want to call it? I'm trying to think what it's called. There's a hidden asset in all of our machinery. And so while there is going to be an upfront cost, what our job is to maximize the money out of that in more ways than just what it produces for us in terms of our outcome. It's also, you know, how can we get it the cheapest? How can we depreciate it? And then how can we get money out of it even after it's gone? So this thing has like a life of its own in terms of...
Right. And you're right. And while I got what you were saying by hidden asset, it's certainly not a hidden piece of equipment, but there are hidden elements of that the, you know, the casual observer of these kinds of machinery would not think about, you know, unless you're in a financial mindset, you wouldn't necessarily think about all these incremental flows going in and out and how beneficial depreciation really is, because that's real cash that's still moving in your business and gives you liquidity in a really impactful way. These kinds of purchases can really be very helpful in many, many ways. Not to mention competing. If it works out well, it gets you what you want, you know what smart manufacturing is all about, you can kind of move yourself into the next generation of, you know, corporation here. It's a very big opportunity, I think, for us. And to some degree, a race, who can get their fastest in each of these industries and make them work well. Lots of them have already gotten there, doing quite well with it. Many others are still, you know, experimenting. We got lots of small and mid-sized companies here in the United States that are still toying with these ideas that need to jump on in.
Well, you definitely helped us better understand what to think about so we can make these decisions. But I think that, you know, part of it is it is overwhelming, and it's hard to look at all this and to make sense out of it and to try to figure out, like, what is this going to cost us if we don't do this now, versus what is this going to cost us to just jump right in. And I think that's the risk, and that's what we're going to finalize in our next podcast, or our last podcast next week, which is, you know, how do we really maximize the risk, and what are some ways that we can make this risk less risky?
Right.
Well, thank you again so much. Look forward to finalizing this last conversation on risk next week.
Thank you. Great to be here.